A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corn. So I'm recording this prompt, keeping my voice down a little bit because little Ezra is having some sleep, which is a relief to all of us, as he's been a bit fussy lately. And I'm just lying down listening to one of your episodes, keeping him company. And it's very enjoyable. We have the white noise running, and you just mentioned white noise in an episode. So it cued me to send in a question about it. I've had a white noise maker for, I'm going to say, 6 or 7 years, and it's one of those things. We did an episode about ridiculous single-use gadgets. There are no end to them, and people will say a white noise machine is a stupid thing, and I would vigorously contest that. We got it when we've lived near so many construction sites, I can't keep count, over the course of our rental career in Jerusalem, and I've talked about my whole kind of sound sensitivity stuff before, and getting a white noise machine electrofan was an absolute breakthrough. And we bought, I'm not kidding, 4 of them, one for the bedroom, living room, my office, and one for travel. I introduced it to a friend who bought me a bottle of wine because he was so happy with it. He's a guy who's got a startup and he travels around the world. And he brings it with him to hotel rooms. And I've been thinking, I remember the first night that I slept with it, I was thinking, why does this feel so great? And then I realized that it's those little things, like we have the rubbish collection guys start doing their thing at like 5 in the morning or something, and about 4 a.m. they clean up the street. And it's all those like backup beepers and those things that it just kind of drowns out, dogs barking, whatever. And I truly think I was looking at a pair of sleep headphones on my nightstand, and I just installed the app that lets you tune up the EQ, and it was one of these products with this ridiculous over-the-top marketing, and they describe white noise as nature's miracle invention. I got a laugh out of it, but I actually thought, I'm kind of with them on that. I'd love to know a little bit more about what these noise frequencies are, because there's white noise, there's pink noise, there's brown noise. Brown noise is like kind of a deeper set of frequencies. Pink noise is higher. And I'd love to know about their use in, I guess, what I'm finding it helpful for, which is noise masking. But I know that these consumer devices are fantastic, but there's actually kind of another layer. We love talking about the fancy implementations on the show. I know that there are some really swishy technologies they even use in offices in which they kind of, it's like ANC meets white noise. They hear the ambient noise, and then they play, instead of just playing the same white noise, they change it a bit slightly to mirror the noise they're trying to cancel out and mask. The other thing that I'd love to know about these gadgets is the electrofans have some technology whereby it doesn't sound like it's one thing on loop. I've no idea what it is, but I'd love to know a little bit more about this tech, because whether you're a parent whose baby seems to sleep well with it, you sleep well with it, you're in an inner city, or all of those things at once, which is our case, I feel like these are really, really fantastic products that are, I certainly have made a great positive impact in my life and in my sleep, and I highly recommend electrofan white noise machines. And that's just one of several that are on the market. They really have a loyal fan following. Over to you two. Let's talk about white noise and how it helps, what the different types are, and if you're looking for one of these, what you're looking for in the product.
Daniel sent us this one. He's recording it while keeping his voice down because little Ezra is finally asleep. He's listening to an episode, white noise running in the background, and it got him thinking. He wants to know about white noise, pink noise, brown noise, what they actually are, how they work for masking, and what makes a good white noise machine. He's a big fan of the electrofan, and honestly, he's not alone in that.
Before we dive in, fun fact, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today. So if anything comes out especially coherent, you know who to thank.
All right, so let's start with the basics. White noise, pink noise, brown noise. These aren't just marketing terms. They're actual signal processing definitions. What's the difference?
It comes down to how the power is distributed across frequencies. White noise has equal power per hertz across the entire frequency spectrum. Every frequency from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz gets the same energy. That's why it sounds like static, like an untuned radio. It's harsh to some people because our ears don't perceive all frequencies equally. We're more sensitive to higher frequencies, so white noise can sound bright, almost hissy.
That's why a lot of people find it grating. It's technically equal, but perceptually, it's tilted toward the treble.
Now pink noise adjusts for that. Instead of equal power per hertz, pink noise has equal power per octave. So each octave band gets the same energy, which means the power density decreases as frequency increases. Specifically, it drops 3 decibels per octave. The result is a sound that's deeper, more balanced to human ears. Think steady rainfall, wind rustling through leaves, a waterfall in the distance.
Pink noise is basically white noise with the treble turned down in a mathematically specific way.
And brown noise goes even further. The power density drops 6 decibels per octave, so it's even more bass-heavy. It's named after Brownian motion, by the way, not the color brown. Robert Brown, the botanist who observed random particle movement in the 1800s.
I was going to say, I always assume someone just looked at it and thought, that sounds brown.
Brown noise sounds like a deep rumble, a distant thunderstorm, a waterfall with a lot of low-end ocean waves crashing. Some people swear by it for sleep, because it masks low. Frequency background sounds really effectively, and it's less intrusive than white noise.
The progression is basically, white noise is flat power across frequencies. Pink noise tilted down at 3 decibels per octave. Brown noise tilted down at 6 decibels per octave. The further you go, the deeper and darker it gets.
There are others beyond those three. Violet noise increases power with frequency. It's the inverse of brown, all treble. Blue noise is similar but less aggressive. Gray noise is designed to sound equally loud across all frequencies to human ears, which is a whole other layer of psychoacoustic engineering.
When Daniel's electrofan is running, what's it actually producing? Is it true white noise?
That's the interesting thing. The electrofan, and let's talk about the actual brand here, because Marpac, which later became YogaSleep, created the original dome sound machine back in 1962. The dome uses a real physical fan inside a housing. There's a motor spinning an actual fan blade, and the sound is produced by air movement, not a digital recording or synthesis.
That's the technology Daniel was asking about? Why, it doesn't sound like a loop. It can't loop because it's a real mechanical process.
A digital white noise machine plays a recorded sample on repeat. Even if the loop is long, your brain can eventually detect the pattern, and that can become distracting or even annoying. The dome physically generates its sound, so there's no loop to detect. The fan spins, air moves through adjustable vents, and the sound is naturally continuous and variable. It's closer to pink noise than white noise, by the way. The sound of rushing air has that natural high-frequency roll-off.
Which explains why people find it more pleasant than a digital white noise generator. It's not actually white noise, it's mechanically generated noise that's closer to pink.
The adjustability matters. The dome has 2 main components you can tweak, the top cap and the side vents. Rotating the cap changes the tone. Tighter cap means higher pitch, looser means lower. Opening and closing the side vents adjusts the volume. So you're not just turning a volume knob, you're shaping the sound profile to your preference and your specific environment.
Daniel mentioned he's got 4 of these things. Bedroom, living room, office, travel. That's a commitment.
He's not unusual. The dome has this cult following. People travel with them, they buy them as gifts. I've seen forum threads where people talk about owning multiple units for decades. The original models were built to last. Simple AC motor, no electronics to fail, no software to update. It's about as low-tech as a product can be while still being genuinely effective.
Let's talk about why it works. What's actually happening when you turn one of these on and suddenly sleep better?
There are 2 main mechanisms at play. The first is sound masking, raising the ambient noise floor so that sudden disruptive sounds don't stand out as much. Your brain is constantly monitoring the acoustic environment even when you're asleep. a dog bark, a car door slam, a garbage truck. These are transient sounds that spike above the background noise and trigger an alertness response.
The white noise doesn't eliminate those sounds. It just makes them less noticeable relative to the background.
The key concept is the signal-to-noise ratio. If your bedroom has a background noise level of 30 decibels and a car horn hits 70 decibels, that's a 40 decibel jump, very noticeable. But if you've got a noise machine running at 60 decibels, that same car horn is only 10 decibels above the background. Your brain processes it differently. It's not that you don't hear it, it's that it doesn't jolt you awake.
The second mechanism.
Auditory masking at the neural level. Certain frequencies of noise can actually make it harder for your auditory cortex to process other sounds in the same frequency band. It's called energetic masking. The noise and the target sound stimulate the same region of the basilar membrane in the cochlea, and the noise essentially wins. Your ear is physically less able to encode the disruptive sound.
It's not just psychological. It's happening at the hardware level in the ear itself.
And there's research backing this up. A 2021 study in sleep medicine looked at white noise in hospital settings and found it significantly improved sleep quality for patients in noisy wards. There's also work showing that white noise can help people with ADH. Defocus. The noise provides a consistent level of stimulation that helps regulate attention. For some people, silence is actually more distracting because any small sound becomes a novelty that pulls focus.
That aligns with what Daniel said about his sound sensitivity. He mentioned having issues with noise before. Construction sites in Jerusalem, backup beepers, the rubbish collection at 5 in the morning. The white noise isn't a luxury for him. It's basically an environmental prosthetic.
That's the right way to think about it. For people with hyperacusis or sensory processing issues, a noise machine is accessibility tech. It's not a single-use gadget. It's a tool that modifies the acoustic environment to be livable.
Daniel mentioned that he introduced a friend to the electrofan, and the friend bought him a bottle of wine as thanks. This friend travels globally and brings it to hotel rooms. That's a real-world stress test. If it works in a random hotel with unpredictable HVAC noise, thin walls, and hallway traffic, it's doing real work.
Hotel rooms are actually one of the hardest acoustic environments. You've got plumbing noise from adjacent rooms, elevators, ice machines, doors closing, conversations in the hallway. A noise machine in a hotel is almost mandatory for light sleepers. I've done the same thing. Not with a dome specifically, but I've used noise apps on my phone.
Let's talk about the office side of this. Daniel mentioned there are swishy technologies where active noise cancellation meets white noise, systems that listen to ambient sound and play something that mirrors it.
This is sound masking, and it's a whole industry. Companies like Cambridge Sound Management, now part of Biamp and Lencore, build systems that install speakers in the ceiling above office cubicles. The speakers emit a carefully shaped noise spectrum, usually something close to pink noise, tuned to match the frequency range of human speech. The goal is to make conversations at adjacent desks unintelligible.
It's specifically targeting speech privacy.
In an open plan office, the biggest productivity killer is overhearing other people's conversations. It's called the irrelevant speech effect. Your brain can't help but process language, even when you're trying to ignore it. Sound masking raises the background level just enough that a conversation 10 feet away becomes indistinct. You can hear that someone is talking, but you can't make out the words.
It's not just a static noise playing at a fixed volume.
That's where the adaptive part comes in. Modern systems use microphones to monitor the ambient noise level and adjust the masking signal in real time. If the office gets quieter, the masking volume drops. If it gets louder, it increases. The goal is to maintain a consistent overall sound level without the masking itself becoming noticeable.
It's a dynamic equilibrium rather than a brute force approach.
The tuning is incredibly specific. These systems aren't just pink noise. They're shaped to a target curve that accounts for the acoustic properties of the space, the ceiling height, the type of furniture, even the HVAC. Noise that's already present. The installers come in with measurement microphones and tune each zone independently. It's shockingly sophisticated for something most employees never consciously notice.
That's the sign of good design, isn't it? If you notice the sound masking, it's probably too loud or poorly tuned.
The ideal implementation is invisible, or inaudible, I suppose. You just feel like the office is comfortable and private without knowing why.
Let's go back to the consumer side. If someone's listening and thinking about getting a noise machine, what should they actually look for? Daniel's already evangelizing the Electrofan, but there are a lot of options.
The first decision is mechanical versus digital. Mechanical machines like the Dome or the Electrofan, which is essentially the same category, real fan-based sound, have the advantage of no looping natural sound and typically longer lifespans. The downside is they're bulkier, they usually only have one or two sound profiles, and they can produce true white or brown noise if that's what you want. Digital machines use recordings or algorithmic synthesis. They can offer dozens of sound options: white noise, pink noise, brown noise, rain, ocean, crickets, whatever. Some are quite sophisticated. The Electrofan, which is also from the same company that makes the Dome now, uses digitally synthesized noise with a wide range of pitch options. It's not a recording, it's generating the sound algorithmically, so there's no loop either.
Even in the digital space, looping isn't necessarily a problem if the device is generating rather than playing back.
The Electrofan has 10 different fan sounds and 10 white noise variants across different frequency profiles. You can dial in exactly the tone you want. And because it's synthesized, it's perfectly consistent. No motor hum, no mechanical variation. Some people prefer that consistency, others find it too sterile.
I'd imagine the mechanical crowd and the digital crowd don't overlap much.
They really don't. The Doom people are almost evangelical about it. They'll tell you the slight irregularity of the mechanical fan is what makes it work. It's more natural, more organic. The digital people want precision and control. Neither is wrong. It's about what your brain responds to.
What about the sleep headphones Daniel mentioned? He said he was looking at a pair with an EQ app.
Sleep headphones are a different approach entirely. Instead of filling the room with noise, you're putting the sound directly in your ears. Products like the Acoustic Sheep sleep phones. Those are the headband style ones with flat speakers, or the Bose sleep buds, which were discontinued and then brought back. The advantage is you're not disturbing a partner, and you can use them anywhere.
You're sleeping with something on or in your ears.
Which is the trade-off? Side sleepers often find earbuds uncomfortable. The headband style is better for that, but they can get warm. And there's the question of whether having sound directly coupled to your ears for 8 hours is a good idea long term. Most of these devices have volume limiters, but still, the room-based machine has zero contact with your body, which some people strongly prefer.
Daniel mentioned his friend with the hotel habit. That's a room-based machine traveling with him, so the portability question matters.
The Dome is not small. It's about 6 inches in diameter, a couple of inches tall, and it needs to be plugged into a wall outlet. The travel version, the Dome Uno, is a bit smaller, but it's still not pocket-sized. Someone who's committed enough to pack a Dome in their luggage really values their sleep.
Or really hates hotel noise.
There are smaller options. The Electrofan Micro is about the size of a golf ball, charges via USB, and has a decent speaker for its size. The Roam is a portable version of the Dome-style device, also USB-powered. The market has definitely responded to the traveler use case.
Let's talk about babies. Daniel mentioned Ezra sleeping with white noise, and this is a huge topic in parenting circles.
It is, and it's one where the science is actually pretty clear. Newborns have spent 9 months in an environment that is anything but quiet. The womb is loud, maternal blood flow, heartbeat, digestive sound. It's estimated at around 70 to 90 decibels in there. Silence is actually foreign and potentially unsettling to a newborn.
White noise is essentially recreating the acoustic environment they're used to.
A famous study from 1990 by Spencer and others, published in the Archives of Disease in Childhood, found that newborns exposed to white noise fell asleep significantly faster than those in silence. About 80% fell asleep within 5 minutes compared to 25% in the control group. That's a dramatic difference.
There's a volume concern, surely.
The American Academy of Pediatrics has guidelines on this. They recommend keeping the noise machine at least 7 feet from the crib and keeping the volume below 50 decibels at the baby's head. Some of the studies that showed benefit used volumes that would be considered too high by current standards, so it's about placement and moderation.
Daniel's a careful guy. I'm sure he's got this dialed in. But for a new parent who just buys a machine and cranks it, that's a real risk.
And there's the separate question of whether continuous white noise during sleep could affect auditory development long term. The evidence there is mixed and mostly in animal models, so it's not something to panic about, but it's worth being aware of. Moderation and sensible volume levels are the key.
You mentioned ADHD earlier. What's the mechanism there?
There's a concept called stochastic resonance. It sounds complicated, but it's actually straightforward. In some systems, adding a certain amount of noise actually improves signal detection rather than degrading it. It's been observed in sensory systems, including human hearing and vision. For people with ADHD, the theory is that a moderate level of background noise provides enough stimulation to keep the brain in an optimal arousal state for focus.
The noise isn't masking distractions. It's actually changing the brain's processing state.
It might be doing both. There's a 2023 review in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry that looked at white noise for ADHD and found modest but consistent benefits for cognitive performance, particularly in tasks requiring sustained attention. It's not a massive effect, but it's there, and it's consistent enough across studies to be taken seriously.
Which explains why some people work better in coffee shops than in libraries. The library is too quiet, and every small noise becomes a distraction. The coffee shop has a steady hum that smooths everything out.
That's the exact phenomenon. And it's why some productivity apps and websites just play coffee shop background noise. It's not about the coffee, it's about the acoustic profile.
Let's circle back to something Daniel asked about specifically. The different colors of noise and which one is best for what.
Here's a rough guide. White noise is good for general masking because it covers the full frequency spectrum. If you've got a mix of high and low frequency disturbances, traffic, voices, clanking pipes, white noise covers it all. But it can sound harsh, so a lot of people prefer pink noise for sleep. Pink noise has that natural rain-like quality and it's better at masking lower frequency sounds. Brown noise is for people who find even pink noise too bright. It's very bass heavy, very rumbly. There's some interesting research on brown noise specifically for ADH. ADH. The deep, steady rumble seems to work well for some people's focus. But honestly, the best noise color is the one that works for you. There's no universal answer.
I've also seen green noise mentioned. What is that?
Green noise is essentially the mid-frequency portion of white noise. It's sometimes described as sounding like a waterfall or a rushing stream. It's not as formally defined as the others. It's more of a marketing term in the sound machine world, but it's essentially noise centered around 500 Hz, which many people find pleasant.
When you buy a high-end digital noise machine that offers all these options, you're essentially auditioning different spectral tilts to see which one your brain likes best.
Which one best matches your specific noise environment? If your bedroom faces a street with mostly truck traffic, brown noise might mask those low-frequency rumbles better than white noise. If you've got birds chirping at dawn, you want something with more high-frequency content. It's a matching problem.
That's a good practical takeaway. Don't just buy a machine and accept the default. Experiment with the different profiles based on what's actually disturbing your sleep.
Pay attention to volume. Louder isn't necessarily better. The goal is to raise the noise floor enough to smooth out the peaks, not to create a wall of sound. Most sleep researchers recommend somewhere between 50 and 65 decibels at your ear, which is about the level of normal conversation.
Daniel asked about that active noise cancellation combined with white noise approach. Is that something that exists in consumer products, or is it mostly commercial?
It's starting to cross over. The office sound masking systems I mentioned are purely commercial. They're six-figure installations for corporate spaces. But there are consumer products that blend ANC with noise generation. The Bose Sleep Buds I mentioned used a combination of passive noise blocking and generated masking sounds. Apple's AirPods Pro have ANC plus a background sounds feature in iOS that can play white noise, rain, ocean, and so on.
You're getting both. The ANC cancels steady-state noise like HVAC hum, and the generated noise masks the transients that ANC can't catch.
ANC is great at canceling continuous, predictable noise, airplane engine drone, air conditioner hum. It's less effective with sudden, unpredictable sounds, a dog bark, a door slam, a baby crying. Those transients are too fast and too variable for the ANC algorithm to respond to in real time. Generated masking noise fills that gap.
That's a useful hybrid approach. And it explains why Daniel's friend in the hotel room is using a noise machine, even though the hotel probably has decent soundproofing. The soundproofing handles the steady background, and the noise machine handles the erratic disturbances.
Hotel soundproofing is wildly inconsistent. Some hotels have solid concrete walls, others are basically drywall and hope. A noise machine is insurance.
Let's talk about the electrofan specifically for a moment, because Daniel's clearly a fan, no pun intended. What makes it different from just putting a box fan in your room?
A box fan does produce noise, and some people do use them for sleep. The difference is in the design intent. A box fan is designed to move air, the noise is a byproduct. The dome and similar products are designed to produce a specific sound profile. The air movement is incidental. The housing is shaped to shape the sound. The adjustable vents, the acoustic chamber, the fan blade design. It's all engineered for the auditory output, not the airflow.
It's a musical instrument in a sense.
That's not a bad way to think about it. It's an acoustic instrument designed to produce a consistent, pleasant broadband noise. And, like an instrument, the quality comes from the physical design, the materials, the tolerances, the tuning.
Daniel mentioned the marketing for some sleep app described white noise as nature's miracle invention. He laughed at that, but said he kind of agrees.
It's over-the-top marketing, but the sentiment isn't wrong. Natural environments are rarely silent. Forests have wind, streams have water noise, coastal areas have waves. Our auditory system evolved in environments with continuous background sound. Total silence is actually a modern, artificial condition, and for many people, it's uncomfortable.
There's a reason silence is used as a stress test in some contexts. Sensory deprivation tanks, isolation chambers. People find total silence disorienting.
There's a condition called tinnitus that makes silence actively unpleasant for millions of people. For someone with tinnitus, a quiet room means the ringing in their ears becomes the dominant sound. A noise machine at a moderate volume can provide enough external sound to make the tinnitus less noticeable. It's not a cure, but it's a management tool that audiologists often recommend.
We've covered sleep, focus, ADHD, tinnitus, office privacy, baby sleep. This is one of those technologies that quietly touches a lot of different domains.
It's been around in various forms for a long time. The first commercial sound conditioners appeared in the 1960s. The dome dates to 1962. But the concept is older. People have been using fountains, wind chimes, and other noise sources for centuries to make spaces feel more comfortable.
The Romans had fountains in their courtyards.
Moving water produces a pleasant broadband noise that masks street sounds and provides acoustic privacy. We've just miniaturized and electrified it.
Let's hit one more angle. What about people who can't stand white noise? Are there alternatives that achieve the same masking effect?
Some people dislike any kind of synthetic noise. For them, natural sound recordings can work. Rain, ocean, forest sounds. The masking effect is similar, though usually less consistent across frequencies. Rain sounds, for example, are mostly in the mid to high frequencies and won't mask low-frequency rumbling as well as brown noise would.
It's a trade-off between pleasantness and masking effectiveness.
And some people find music works better, something ambient and repetitive, without lyrics, at a low volume. Lyrics are a problem because your brain tries to process the language, which is the opposite of what you want for sleep. But instrumental ambient music can provide a similar masking effect with a more pleasant aesthetic.
Daniel specifically asked for product recommendations. What to look for if you're in the market?
All right, here's a practical checklist. First, decide mechanical versus digital. If you want the natural, non-looping sound and you don't mind the size, go mechanical. Dome or similar. If you want multiple sound options, portability, and precise control, go digital. The Electrofan series is the standard recommendation there. The Dome Classic runs about $40 to $50. The Electrofan is in the same range. The portable versions, Dome Uno, Electrofan Micro, are around $30 to $35. The high-end digital machines with app control and dozens of sounds can run up to $100 or more, but the sweet spot for most people is that $40 to $50 range.
What about the apps? Daniel mentioned an EQ app for sleep headphones.
There are some very good noise generator apps. MyNoise is one that gets recommended a lot. It lets you customize the frequency profile with a graphic equalizer, so you can create your own noise color. The app generates the sound algorithmically, not from recordings, so there's no loop. It's a one-time purchase, and it's powerful if you want to experiment with what works for your ears.
You could essentially design your own personal noise profile.
And that's actually the ideal approach if you're patient enough to dial it in. Everyone's hearing is slightly different, everyone's noise environment is different, and everyone's sensitivity is different. A custom-tuned noise profile is going to work better than a one-size-fits-all preset. The downside is you need your phone near your bed, and phone speakers aren't great at low frequencies.
Which brings us back to dedicated hardware. A good speaker in a purpose-built housing is going to outperform a phone speaker, especially in the bass range.
A phone speaker physically can't reproduce brown noise properly. The driver is too small to move enough air at low frequencies. If you want deep, rumbly noise, you need a larger speaker or a mechanical source.
The recommendation for someone starting from scratch, figure out what kind of noise profile you prefer. White, pink, brown. Then decide whether you value natural mechanical sound or digital flexibility. Then pick a device in your budget that matches those preferences.
Don't overthink it. Most people will sleep better with any of these options compared to an untreated noisy environment. The differences between a $40 dome and a $40 electrofan are real, but they're not enormous. The biggest improvement is going from nothing to something.
Daniel's been using his electrofan for 6 or 7 years. That's a pretty strong endorsement right there.
Longevity is one of the mechanical machine's biggest advantages. No firmware to become obsolete, no battery to degrade, no app to stop being supported. It's a motor and a switch. People report using the same dome for 20, 30 years. That's almost unheard of in consumer electronics.
There's something refreshing about a product that just does one thing and does it for decades.
It's the anti-smart device. And in a world where everything wants to connect to Wi-Fi and send you notifications, there's a real appeal to something that just spins a fan and makes a pleasant sound.
Alright, I think we've covered the territory. The physics, the biology, the product landscape, the practical advice. Daniel wanted to know about the different noise colors, how masking works, and what to look for in a machine. I think we delivered.
One last thing worth mentioning. If you're using white noise for a baby, the placement and volume guidelines are not optional. 7 feet from the crib, below 50 decibels at the baby's head. There are free sound level meter apps that are accurate enough to check this. It's worth doing.
Good practical note to end on. Safety first, even with something as seemingly benign as a noise machine.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The collective noun for a group of pugs is a grumble.
Right. Here's the forward-looking thought. As cities get denser and remote work keeps people at home during construction hours, the demand for acoustic environment control is only going to grow. We might see noise machines become a standard in bedrooms, as alarm clocks used to be. And the technology is getting better. Adaptive systems, personalized profiles, hybrid ANC and masking. The humble fan in a box might be the starting point, but the category has a lot of room to evolve.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com, and if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen.
We'll be back with another one soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.